hope everyone's having a good Sabbath. You know, it sometimes seems like I haven't seen anybody since last year, you know. But of course, we know God's year begins in the spring, so that's not true. Today's message, you know, I'm not really all that worried about titles usually, but I just went ahead and named this one Frenemy at the Gates. You know, kind of playing words from an old war movie that I saw years and years ago. But the reason for that is the definition of frenemy. And if you're not familiar, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, cute way of describing relationships between people that can occur, especially nowadays, as man gets increasingly more selfish or, you know, the mean girls, so to speak, from high school that kind of smile and backstab. The definition of frenemy is a person whom one is friendly despite a person with whom one is friendly despite a fundamental dislike or rivalry. You know, and Satan, called the devil, the dragon, the evil one, the angel of the bottomless pit, the prince of this world, the prince of the power of the air, the god of this world, Apollyon, Abaddon, Belial, Beelzebub, is an ancient and real powerful being. But who is Satan? Many images, stories, and much folklore has been handed down detailing the lowercase god of this age. But what do we really know about this great adversary? Some would style him as nothing more than an allegory of human struggle. Others, as a gatekeeper of fame, fortune, and power in this age. I kind of lean towards that way. If someone's really powerful, I think he's got something to do with them. Others, or as you were, some even claim that this mighty being, and he is mighty, is so powerful as to rival and compete with God, Jehovah Elohim, the Almighty. Some points I'm going to make in discussing this. This is more kind of like a know your enemy kind of sermon, you know, to just have aware. And there's no way I can ever give a complete picture because, again, we have to remember that Satan's been around longer than mankind. You know, he's probably got a bunch of things that even we don't know about, but I'll try and stick mostly to just scripture for my picture of him. Satan is mighty. He is subtle. These are the main points I'll be covering, by the way. Satan is mighty. Satan is subtle. Satan is tolerant to all but the righteous. Satan, as a tool in service to God Almighty, is condemned to destruction, both he and his. On the first point, Satan is mighty. If you'll look at 1 Peter chapter 5, and we'll be reading verse 5 through 11. For all the New Testament verses here, I'm going to be sticking to a faithful version, which is published by the Church of God in a different organization. And for the Old Testament, I'll be sticking to the 2009 translation of the Scriptures. Again, not that I'm endorsing either one. They're just translations I like, and they're free online, digital formats and all that, so people can get a hold of them, unlike that new King somebody or others. But 1 Peter chapter 5, beginning in verse 5, in the same manner, you younger men, be subject to the older men. All of you be subject to one another, being clothed with humility, because God sets himself against the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Be humbled, therefore, under the mighty hand of God. One second. Under the mighty hand of God, so that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your cares upon him, because he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary, the devil, is prowling about as a roaring lion, seeking anyone he may devour, whom resists steadfast in faith, knowing that the same afflictions are being fulfilled among your brethren who are in the world. And clearly, as we see how many folks are sick. There are afflictions being shared all across, like germs, it seems. Now, may the God of all grace, who has called us unto his eternal glory in Jesus Christ, after you have suffered a little while, himself perfect you, establish, strengthen, and settle you. To him be the glory and power into the ages of eternity. Amen. Anybody who knows anything about big cats knows that there's one fundamental rule with those that work around big cats. I don't myself, but I've seen a whole lot of documentaries, you know, and the one thing you don't do with a lion or a cheetah, a tiger, a puma is turn your back on them. Even if you're familiar with the animal, if your back is turned towards them, that's when they sneak up and they'll pounce. And if you ever want to do an experiment and you're at a zoo and you trust the handiwork of man that's separating you and that lion, go ahead and turn your back on it and see what it'll do. It'll probably sneak up and try and pounce through the window. If you will, look at Luke chapter 11 and verse 14. We'll see the authority of Satan here from Christ's own testimony. Luke chapter 14 and verse 20, as you were, Luke chapter 11 and verse 14. Now he, Christ, was casting out a demon, and it was dumb. But it came to pass when the demon had gone out, the one who had been dumb spoke. And the multitudes were amazed, but some of them said, he is casting out demons by the power of Beelzebub, the Lord of the flies, prince of demons. And others, tempting him, were seeking a sign from heaven. But he, knowing their thoughts, said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against a house falls. And if Satan is also divided against himself, how shall his kingdom stand? Consider now, because you are saying that I cast out demons by Beelzebub. And if I by Beelzebub cast out demons, by whom do your sons cast them out? Because of this, they shall be your judges. But if I by the finger of God cast out demons, then the kingdom of God has come upon you. When a strong man who is armed against guards his own dwelling, his goods are safe. But when a stronger man comes, then he comes upon him, he overcomes him and takes away his armor in which he trusted and divides his spoil. The one who is not with me is against me, and the one who does not gather with me scatters. Here you see Satan does have a kingdom, and that kingdom is this age. And if you will, to further reinforce this, the might of this king of this age, we'll look into Revelation chapter 2, Revelation 2, verse 9. Of Smyrna, we see Christ says, I know your works and the tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, and the blasphemy of those who declare themselves to be Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear any of the things which you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried, and you shall have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. Then dropping down to verse 12 through 13, talking to the church of Pergamos, and to the angel of the church of Pergamos write these things, says he who has a sharp two-edged sword. I know your works and where you dwell, where the throne of Satan is, but you are holding fast to my name and did not deny my faith, even in the days which Antipas was my faithful witness, who was killed among you where Satan dwells. Satan has a kingdom. He has a throne, and from that throne is authority. And even God himself testifies of the might of this being we call Satan. If you look back in the book of Job, Job chapter 41, and we'll be starting in verse 1 of Job 41. And this is where God's answering Job out of the whirlwind, you know, and he told him to gird his loins and stand up and answer as a man. For me, this is probably the most terrifying verse in the Bible. You know, I'm thankful at times I was grumbling and complaining, God didn't appear suddenly in a whirlwind and tell me to answer for myself, but one day we all will have to. God here says to Job, would you draw out Leviathan with a hook or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Would you put a cord through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Would he keep on pleading with you? Would he speak softly to you? Would he make a covenant with you to be taken as a servant forever? Would you play with him as with a bird, or leash him for your young girls? Would trading partners bargain over him? Would they divide him among the merchants? Fill his skin with harpoons, or his head with fishing spears? Put your hand upon him and think of the struggle. Do not do it again. See, any expectation of him is disappointed. He is laid down even at the sight of him. No one is so foolhardy as to wake him up. Who then is able to stand against me? Because God has done all those things. Who has given to me first that I should repay him under all the heavens that is mine? I would not keep silent concerning his limbs or his mighty power or his fair frame. Who shall take off the surface of his skin? Who approaches him with a double bridle? Who shall open the doors of his face with all his frightening teeth all around? Rows of scales are his pride, closed up, a binding seal. One to the other, they fit closely. Not even a breath enters in between them. They are joined together, they stick together and are not separated. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. And again, this almost sounds like Smaug for anyone who's familiar with J.R.R. Tolkien's description of the dragon there. And this is where we get fire-breathing dragons, I'm sure. Because even fables are based in a little bit of reality. Continuing on, out of his mouth go forth firebrands. Sparks of fire shoot out. Out of his nostrils comes smoke, like a boiling pot or kettle. His breath sets coals on fire, and flames go out of his mouth. Strength dwells in his neck, and fear leaps before him. The folds of his flesh cleave together. They are firm on him, immovable. His heart is as a heart of stone, even as hard as a lower millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. Because of his crashings, they are bewildered. No sword that reaches him does prevail, neither spear, dart, or lance. He reckons iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. The arrow does not make him flee. Sling stones become like stubble to him. Clubs are reckoned as straw. He laughs at the rattle of a lance. His undersides are like sharp pot shards. He sprawls on the mud like a threshing sledge. He makes the deep boil like a pot. He makes the sea like a pot of ointment. He leaves a shining path behind him. One would think the deep to be gray-haired. No one on earth is like him, one made without fear. He sees all that is haughty. He is sovereign over all the sons of pride. And there you have it. Every time, if you wonder why, you know, if you elect somebody or they get into a seat of power and why they don't do the things they do, or they say they're going to do, or why they act one way, it seems like it's all going one direction. Well, I wonder how you would act if you were in that position and this being came to see you. You know, and I'm not saying that I know that Satan's personally holding meetings with people, but I tend to think that none of this is allegory. It is all true. And this mighty being, if he showed up and told you to follow this initiative, you're probably going to step in behind him. It'd take faith in God to do otherwise. Again, like Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego looking into the face of Nebuchadnezzar and saying, we're not going to worship you, even in the face of that fiery furnace. My next point, Satan is subtle. Satan is subtle. In Genesis chapter 3, in verse 1, we see the very first mention of Satan, although even at this point, he'd already been more than likely a very ancient being. or in the Garden of Eden here. And in the Scriptures 2009 version, the word serpent is actually Nahash. And so if you hear me say that Nahash, that's just translated into serpent. But it also can mean a whisperer, you know, the serpent or whisperer. And the Nahash, or serpent, was more crafty than all the lives which of the field which Jehovah Elohim had made. And he said to the woman, "Is it true that Elohim has said, 'Do not eat of every tree in the garden?'" And the woman said to the serpent, "We are to eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim has said, 'Do not eat of it, nor touch it, lest you die.'" And the Nahash, the serpent, the whisperer, said to the woman, "You shall certainly not die. For Elohim knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be like Elohim, knowing good and evil." And the woman saw the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise. And she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made loin coverings for them. And they heard the voice of Jehovah Elohim walking in the garden in the cool day of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Jehovah Elohim among the trees of the garden. And Jehovah Elohim called unto Adam and said to him, "Where are you?" And again, just to be clear, God knew where Adam was. He wasn't aloof in any ways. And he said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked. So I hid myself." And he said, "Who made you know that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree which I commanded you not to eat?" And the man said, it's your fault, as he continues on here. And the man said, "The woman you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I ate." And Jehovah Elohim said to the woman, "What is this that you have done?" And the woman said, "The serpent, the Nahash, has deceived me, and I ate." And Jehovah Elohim said to the Nahash, the serpent, the whisperer, "Because you have done this, you are cursed more than all the livestock and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you are to go and eat dust all the days of your life. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed, and he shall crush your head, and you shall crush his heel." Subtly of this, Satan was telling her, "You will not surely die." And again, we know God's plan. We know that Eve didn't die in that day, but on that day, her death was sure. Just like on that day, Christ's death was sure, because he is slain from the foundation of the earth, from the foundation of humanity. And on a lighter side note, some people have speculated that perhaps going back to this is why it's so hard to get your wife to choose where she wants to eat, because the last time they chose dinner, it didn't go well. If you will look to Ezekiel, continuing on his subtlety, I think, sneakiness, we'll say. Ezekiel chapter 28 and verse 12. Ezekiel chapter 28 and verse 12. We have here the lamentations being taken up, and previously it had been for the prince of Tyre, which was the man who rules here. And then we have Ezekiel being told, "Son of man, take up a lamentation for the sovereign of Tyre, and you shall say unto him, 'Thus says Master Jehovah, you were sealing up a pattern, complete in wisdom and perfect in loveliness. You were in the garden, you were in Eden, the garden of Elohim. Every precious stone was your covering, the ruby, the topaz, the diamond, the beryl, the shoham, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, emerald, and gold. The workmanship of your settings and the mountings prepared for you on the day you were created. You were the anointed cherub that covered. I placed you, and you were on the set-apart mountain of Elohim. You walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. And right there where it's talking about being in the Garden of Eden, I bring this verse out just to show that that wasn't just some snake. You know, that wasn't some lizard-like snake that lost its legs and that's why they crawl on their bellies. The physical snake isn't the one who deceived Eve. It was Satan, and we see that later on in Revelation 2. If you will, look in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, beginning in verse 9. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 9. Now for this cause I wrote to you, that I might know the testing you, whether you are obedient in everything. But to whom you forgive anything, I also forgive. And if I have forgiven anything to whomever I have forgiven it, for your sakes I forgave it in the person of Christ, so that we may not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. And Satan will try to outwit us. And trust me, if you're going to try and win him in a battle, wits, you know, we've got the song, The Devil Went Down to Georgia. It ain't going to happen. In fact, he probably produced that song, if we all remember Paul Harvey. You know, if I were the devil, well, I'd make myself look weak and foolish in a lot of ways. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 9, Paul continues, and when I was present with you and in need, I was not a burden to anyone, for the brethren who came from Macedonia fully supplied my needs. For I kept myself, and will continue to keep myself, from being burdensome to you in any way. As the truth of Christ is in me, no one shall stop me from this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Why? Because I don't love you? God knows I do. But what I am doing, I will do, so that I may cut off any occasion from those who are desiring an occasion, so that in things they boast of, they may also be found even as we are. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers who are transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And it is no marvel, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, there is no great thing if his servants also transform themselves as ministers of righteousness, whose end is even to be according to their own works. In a story of subtle wickedness and rebellion, mirroring remarkably close to that of Satan, we see even in David's kingdom, his son Absalom, after giving him a reprieve from the guilt of killing his brother in cold, calculated blood for the rape of his sister Tamar, Absalom is allowed to return to the kingdom as a limited capacity, as we see in 2 Samuel chapter 14. And I will say, this story, when I was younger, I used to look at it and say, well, yeah, I understand Absalom. That's, if that was my sister, even if it's a half-brother, I'd want a vengeance. But he didn't go to the king. He instead used guile, deceit, and trickery, and ruminated on it until he had a chance to strike. And he went to David with false pretenses to set his brother up. I've matured in my view of this story, I guess. But in 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 24, we see after all that had come and passed, and he is allowed to return to the kingdom, just not to see David. Speaking of him, it says, and the sovereign said, King David said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. And Absalom went to his own house and did not see the king's face. And in all of Israel, there is none who was praised as much as Absalom for his handsomeness. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he cut the hair of his head, for it was every year's end that he cut it because it was heavy upon him, when he cut it, he weighed out the hair of his head 200 shekels by the king's weight. Notice the praise of his handsomeness, you know, and no offense to any of us, but I don't think if between the men of this room, all of us have 200 shekels worth of hair. Now, if we put it all together. But the pride of beauty was probably, no doubt, strong in him. And if you fall down to chapter 15 of 2 Samuel, chapter 15, verse 1, we see later on, and it came to be that after this, that Absalom prepared a chariot and horses for himself, and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom used to rise early and stand behind beside the way to the gate. And it came to be, whenever anyone who had a complaint came to the king for a right ruling, Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And when he said, "Your servant is from such and such and such a tribe of Israel," Absalom would say to him, "Look, your matters are good and right, but you have nobody from the sovereign to hear you." And Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any complaint or case would come to me, and I shall let right be done to him." And it came to be, whenever anyone came near him to bow down to him, he would put out his hand, take hold of him, and kiss him. You know, this sounds much how the Pope acts when people come before him. And Absalom did this to all Israel who came to the sovereign for right ruling. And Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Is this not as Satan does by placing himself between the world and God? He was willing to give Christ all the world's wealth, kingdoms, and power if he would but worship him. And this Faustian bargain would have come at the cost of just everything. As we have seen in 2 Corinthians, Satan too has ministers. He has apostles. Because of this, we are wise to remember the example in the first book of Kings. If you look at 1 Kings chapter 12, 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse 33, and this is at the foundation of the northern tribes of Israel's kingdom, one of the first things that Jeroboam, who had been given that kingdom straight to him by God from the mouth of a prophet and anointed, for whatever reason, sets up the golden calves. And at the inaugural institution of this is where we come in. 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse 28. So the sovereign, the king, took counsel and made two calves of gold and said to the people, "It is too much for you to go to Jerusalem. See your mighty ones, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt." And he set up one in Bethel, or the house of God, and the other he put in Dan, which is a city in the north that effectively made it so these were at the borders of Israel, north and south. And this matter became a sin, for the people went to one as far as Dan, and he made the house of high places, and he made priests from all sorts of people who were not of the sons of Levi. And Jeroboam performed a festival on the 15th day of the 8th month, a festival that like the one that was in Judah. He offered on the slaughtering place, so he did at Bethel, slaughtering calves that he had to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel, he appointed priests of the high place which he made, and he made offerings on the altar which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, and in the new moon which he had devised from his own heart. And he performed a festival for the children of Israel and offered on the slaughtering place and burned incense. Continue on into chapter 13, verse 1. And see, a man of Elohim went from Judah to Bethel by the word of Jehovah, while Jeroboam was standing by the altar to burn incense. And he cried out against the altar by word of Jehovah, saying, "O altar, O altar, thus says Jehovah, see, a son is to be born to the house of David. Josiah is his name. And on you he shall slaughter the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and the men's bones be burned upon you." And he gave a sign that same day, saying, "This is the sign which Jehovah has spoken. See, the altar is split apart, and the ashes on it is poured out." And it came to be when the king Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God crying out against him in the altar in Bethel, that he stretched out his hand from the slaughtering place, saying, "Seize him." Then his hand, while he stretched out towards him, dried up so that he's unable to bring it back. and the altar was split apart, and the ashes poured out from the altar, according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of Jehovah. And the king answered and said to the man of God, "Please appease the face of Jehovah, your Elohim, and pray for me, that my hand might be restored to me." And the man of God appeased the face, or turned to God and prayed, and the king's hand was restored to him as it was before. Then the king said to the man of Elohim, "Come with me and refresh yourself, and I give you a gift." But the man of God said to the king, "If you were to give me half your house, I would not go with you, nor do I eat bread nor drink water in this place. For so he commanded me by the word of Jehovah, saying, 'Do not eat bread, nor drink water, nor even return by the same way you came.' So that he went another way and did not return by the way which he came to Bethel." So this man of God had explicit instructions. God had warned him of temptation coming, and here he thought, "I rejected it. I turned down the king and turn away and go home." But continuing on in chapter 13, we find that, as I said, Satan has ministers and he's got his own apostles. And they will try and join themselves to you at times and say, "I believe just as you do. We're one in the same. We're on the same team. We just want what's right." 1 Kings chapter 13, verse 11, "And a certain old prophet who was dwelling at Bethel and his sons came and told him all the works of the man of God had done that day in Bethel, the words which he had spoken to the king. And their father said, 'Which way did he go?' And his son had seen the way which the man of Elohim who had come from Judah. And he said to his sons, 'Saddle a donkey for me.' And they saddled a donkey, and he rode out on it, and went after the man of God, and found him sitting under a tree, a Tebereth tree. And he said to him, 'Are you the man of Elohim who came from Judah?' And he said, 'I am.' And he said to him, 'Come home with me and eat bread.' And he said, 'I am not able to return with you or go in with you, nor am I able to eat bread or drink water with you in this place.'" So again, he remembered his calling. "For word came to me by the word of Jehovah, 'Do not eat bread, nor drink water, nor return by going the way you came.' And he said to him, 'I too am a prophet like you and a messenger.'" And "I too am a prophet like you, and a messenger spoke to me," or an angel spoke to me, "by the word of Jehovah, saying, 'Bring him back with you to your house, and let him eat bread, and let him drink water.' But he lied to him, so that he turned back with him, back to Bethel, back the way which he had come, and ate bread at his house, and drank water. And as it came to be, as they sat at the table, that the word," "that the word of the prophet, that the word of Jehovah came to the prophet who had brought him back. And he cried out to the man of God who came from Judah, saying, 'Thus says Jehovah, because you have rebelled against the mouth of Jehovah and have not guarded or kept the command which Jehovah your God commanded you, and turned back and ate bread and drank water in the place which he said to you, "Do not eat bread nor drink water," your body shall not enter the burial site of your fathers. And it came to be, after he'd eaten bread and after he'd drunk, that he saddled a donkey for him, for the prophet whom he had brought back. And he went, and a lion, a ravenous lion, went and met him on the way and killed him. And his body was thrown on the way, and the donkey was standing by it. The lion was standing by his body. And see, as men passed by and saw the body and reported it, that the city, in the city where the old prophet dwelt. And the prophet who brought him back from the way heard it and said, 'It is a man of God who rebelled against the mouth of Jehovah.' And Jehovah gave him to the lion and tore it apart and killed him, according to the word of Jehovah, which he had spoken to him." Again, this man didn't see himself as being yoked to him anymore. He didn't go throw himself into the lion. He eventually goes on to claim his body and bury it in the place of his fathers, and eventually would himself be buried with this false prophet, or with this true prophet. But again, there's no love lost. When the trial came, the man of God was on his own. And you got to beware. No matter who someone says they are, trust God's word over one who says they are of God. And let their works bear it out. If you will, look in Matthew. Matthew chapter 26 and verse 14. Matthew chapter 26 and verse 14. We will see the example of one of the prophets, or one of the disciples of Jesus Christ himself. Matthew 26:14. Then one of the 12, who's called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What are you willing to give me? And I will deliver him up to you." And they offered him 30 pieces of silver. And from that time on, he sought an opportunity to betray him. And if you will, look at Luke chapter 22. Luke 22 and verse 2. And the chief priests, continuing on in this story, there's bits and pieces in different gospels. And the chief priests and the scribes were speculating as to how they might put him, Christ, to death, for they feared the people. Then Satan entered into Judas, surnamed Iscariot, being of the number of the 12. And he went away and spoke with the chief priests and the captains about a way which he might betray him. And they rejoiced and gave him money. And he promised and sought an opportunity to betray him to them away from the multitude, or secretly so the people couldn't see. And go ahead and keep your place in Luke 22. But we're going to look back quickly at Mark chapter 14, Mark 14 and 41. And he came the third time, Christ, after he's praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, and said to him, "Sleep on now and take your rest. It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Arise, let us be going. Look, the one who is betraying me is approaching." And immediately, while he is speaking, Judas, being one of the 12, came up with a great multitude with swords and clubs, the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. Now, the one who is betraying him had given them a sign, saying, "Whomever I shall kiss, he is the one. Arrest him and take him securely away." And as soon as he came up to him, he said, "Master, Master," and kissed him earnestly. Remember, this is Judas, and he's possessed of Satan. And very subtly, he betrays him, not with word, not with shouts, not with a challenge, but with a kiss, an earnest kiss. And then back in Luke chapter 22, Luke 22 verse 47, you see a story, same story, same place. "And while he was still speaking, then a crowd suddenly appeared. And the one who's called Judas, one of the 12, going out in front of him, he came near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said, 'Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?' And when those who were with him saw what was about to happen, they said, 'Lord, shall we strike with the sword?'" Because again, Christ had told them specifically just hours before, "Make sure you grab a sword." "Then a certain one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus answered and said, 'That is enough.' And he touched the ear and healed him. And Jesus said to those who had come out against him, the chief priests and captains and the elders, 'Have you come out as against a thief with swords and clubs? When I was daily with you in the temple, you did not stretch your hands out against me. But this is your hour, the power of darkness.'" Again, I think Jesus told them to have a sword so that it wouldn't say that he was taken in weakness, and the whole point was not to use it, because as Christ tells us, he can summon a whole legion of angels to come fight for him if that's God's will. Sometimes it's not God's will. Sometimes we have to do what's considered foolish of the world and what's right and wise in God's eyes. Now, my next point, Satan is tolerant to all except the righteous. Satan is very tolerant. Look around at the world now and through history. many religions, many cultures, many ways, all tolerant of the most wicked behaviors, yet at enmity with God and his people always. If we look at Deuteronomy, God warns us of this worldly tolerance. Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 29. Moses, giving instruction to the children of Israel, says, "When Jehovah your Elohim does cut off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, guard yourselves not to be ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, that you do not inquire about their mighty ones, saying, 'How do these nations serve their mighty ones?' And let me do so too. Do not do so to Jehovah your Elohim, for every abomination which Jehovah hates they have done to their mighty ones. For they even burn their sons and daughters in the fire to their mighty ones. And all the words which I am commanding you, guard to do it. Do not add to nor take away from it." Then in Deuteronomy chapter 18 and verse 9, again, Moses really drives a point home here. It's almost as if God had told him that something was going to happen down the road. "When you come into the land which Jehovah your Elohim is giving you, do not learn according to the abominations of those nations. Let no one be found among you who makes his son or daughter to pass through the fire, or one who practices divination, or user of magic, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one that conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritualist, or one who calls up the dead. For whoever does these abominations to Jehovah, and because of these abominations, Jehovah your Elohim drives them out from before you. Be perfect before Jehovah your Elohim, for these nations whom you are possessing do not listen, do listen to those using magic and diviners. But as for you, Jehovah your Elohim has not appointed such for you." Years ago when I was younger, I used to watch a lot of those ghost investigation shows and such, where people go and search out, and you would sometimes see, on Unsolved Mysteries and different things like that, and you would see the interview of these people who were suffering from these demonic things, and they would be talking about their story. And one thing's kind of stood out to me looking back on it. A lot of times these people would say, "I went to the priest, and the priest got me connected with such and such a psychic, or they gave me this clump of sage to burn and purify my house." There's people that do this stuff and they say, "Well, that's not real. That's not that kind of magic. This is light magic, like Glenda the good witch, This isn't that evil stuff. This is good magic." Again, there is no good magic. You've got God. If you have problems, regardless of what they are, turn to God. Jeremiah chapter 10. Jeremiah chapter 10 in verse 1. "Hear the word which Jehovah speaks to you, O house of Israel, and you, the church, we are the house of Israel. Thus says Jehovah, do not learn the ways of the nations, for the laws of these people are worthless. For one cuts a tree from a forest, work for the hands of the craftsman with a cutting tool, and they beautify it with silver and with gold, and they strengthen it with nails and hammers so that it doesn't fall over. They are like a rounded post, and they do not speak. They have to be carried because they do not walk. Do not be afraid of them, for they do no evil, nor in them is to do any good." Christmas, which is just past, is a very definition of amalgamating worldwide pagan traditions with the name of Christ, the Anointed One, but not of our Christ, not our Father's Son. Why, during this season of joy, do so many suffer in debt and depression? Their halls are decked with folly. And we will see these trees, which just last week everyone was gathered around, so beautifully decorated, tossed out into the gutters here in the next week or two, dried, dead, and ready to be tossed into the fire. In the book of Daniel, the book of Daniel, chapter 11 and verse 30, we see this prophecy given about the king of the north. Daniel chapter 11 and verse 30. For the ships of Kittim shall come against him, the king of the north, and he shall lose heart and shall return in a rage against the set apart covenant or the holy covenant, and shall act and shall return and consider or show favor to those who forsake the holy covenant. And strong ones shall rise from him and profane the holy place, the stronghold, and they shall take away that which is continual and set up the abomination that lays waste. And by flatteries shall he profane those who do wrong against the covenant. But the people who know their God, or know their Elohim, shall be strong and shall act. And those people who have insight shall give understanding to many. And they shall stumble by sword and flame, by captivity and plundering for many days. And when they shall stumble, they shall be helped, a little help. But many shall join them by flatteries. And some of those who have insight shall stumble, that's some of us, shall stumble to refine them, to cleanse them, and to make them white until the time of the end. For it is still a time, for it is still an appointed time. And the king shall do as he pleases, and shall exalt himself, and show himself to be great above every mighty one, and speak incredible matters against the El of mighty ones, the God of gods. And shall prosper until the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been decreed shall be done. And now to my last point. Satan, as a tool in the service to God Almighty, is condemned to destruction, both he and his. Satan is a servant and subject to God. As we have already seen earlier in Job, where we read, you don't have to turn there, but where we read, God says, would you draw a Leviathan out with a hook, or snare with a tongue with the line which you lower? Would you put a cord through his nose? Would you pierce his jaw with a hook? Would he keep pleading with you? Would he speak softly to you? Would he make a covenant with you, be taken as a servant forever? Would you play with him as a bird, or leash him for your young girls? And again, we see, while Satan is not explicitly identified by name, we do see in 1 Kings chapter 22, 1 Kings 22 verse 9, a story about a lying spirit. Therefore, this is a prophet of God speaking to Ahab of what he saw in vision. Therefore he said, or then he said, therefore hear the word of Jehovah. I saw Jehovah sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing by him, on his right and on his left. And he said, who shall entice Ahab to go and fall at Ramoth Gilead? And this one said this, and another said that. And a spirit came forward and stood before Jehovah and said, let me entice him. And Jehovah said to him, in what way? And he said, I shall go out and be a spirit of falsehood in the mouth of all of his prophets. And he said, entice him and also prevail. Go out and do so. And now see, Jehovah has put a false spirit of falsehood in the mouth of all these prophets of yours, and has spoken evil concerning you. And Zedekiah the son of Kenan came forth and struck Michael on the cheek and said, where did the spirit of Jehovah pass over from me to speak to you? And Michael said, look, you shall see on the day which you go into an inner room to hide. And the king of Israel said, take Michael and return him to Ammon, the governor of the city, and Yosh, the son of the sovereign, and say, thus says the king, put this one in prison and feed him with bread of affliction and water of affliction until I come in peace. And Micaiah said, if you ever return in peace, Jehovah has not spoken by me. And he said, hear all you people. Again, if Ahab had returned, then he hadn't been spoken to. But if you continue reading the story, you'll see Ahab does not return. In fact, his blood is lapped up by the dogs. And brethren, also, as we know from the Gospel of John, If you look at John chapter 8 and verse 39, Jesus said to them, speaking to the Pharisees and the Sadducees who were there, if you were Abraham's children, this is why I identify that angel, the lying spirit, as either being Satan or one of Satan's followers. Jesus said, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has spoken truth to you, which I have heard from God. Abraham did not do this. You are doing the works of your father. And they said to him, we have not been born of fornication. Just on a side note, that's kind of ironic, as the Jews actually were. You know, when Judah went into his daughter-in-law thinking she was a working lady. Anyways, continuing on, we have one Father, that is God. Therefore, Jesus said to him, if God were your Father, you would love me, because I proceeded forth and came from God. For I have not come of myself, but he sent me. Why don't you understand my speech? Because you cannot bear to hear my words. You are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father you desire to practice. He was a murderer from the beginning. He has not stood in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own self, for he is a liar and the father of it. And because I speak the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you can convict me of sin? But if I speak the truth, why don't you believe me? The one who is of God hears the words of God. For this reason you do not hear, because you are not of God. God uses the wicked for the education of those whom he loves, to try and test whether you will follow him or follow after the lusts of wickedness. As we know from Ezekiel 28, that Satan sealed up the measure of perfection, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty, and was perfect in his ways from the day he was created until iniquity was found in him. By the multitude of his merchandise, he was filled with violence, and he then sinned. His rebellion, the first one, was defeated, and he made a covenant with God to serve God once more, a covenant he shall break and be cast down from heaven and from God's presence yet again. In Revelation chapter 12 and verse 13, or as you were, Revelation 12, verse 3. And another sign was seen in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having seven heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns on his heads. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and cast them down to earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to deliver, that he might devour her child when she gave birth. And she gave birth to a man-child who was to shepherd all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. In chapter 12, verse 7, and there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels warred against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels warred. But they did not prevail, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, the ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, who, deceiving the whole world, he was cast down to the earth, and his angels down with him. And I heard a great voice in heaven saying, now has come the salvation and the power of the kingdom of our God, the authority of his Christ, because the accuser of our brethren has been cast down, who accuses them day and night before our God. But they overcame him through the blood of the Lamb and through the word of his testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore, rejoice, you heavens, and those who dwell in them. Woe to those that inhabit the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows he has only a short time. And then, if you look to Revelation chapter 19, and beginning in verse 11, and I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he does judge and make war. And his eyes were like the flame of fire, and his head were many crowns. And he had a name written that no one knows except him. And he was clothed with a garment dipped in blood, and his name is the Word of God. And the armies of heaven were following him on white horses. Brethren, I hope you're ready to be in the spiritual cavalry, because if you remain faithful, then we'll be on those horses. And they were clothed in fine linen, white and pure. Verse 15. And out of his mouth goes a sharp sword, that with it he might smite the nations. And he shall shepherd them with an iron rod. And he treads the winepress of fury and the wrath of the Almighty God. Now on his garment and on his thigh he had a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun. And he cried out in a loud voice to all the birds that fly in the midst of heaven, saying, Come, gather yourselves together to the supper of the great God, so that you may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of chief captains, and the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and the flesh of those who sit on them, and the flesh of all, free and bond, small and great. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war with him who sits on the horse and with his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet, who worked miracles in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. Those two were cast alive into the lake of fire, which burns with brimstone. And the rest were killed by the sword of him who sits on the horse, even the sword that goes out of his mouth. And the birds were filled with their flesh. If you will, go ahead and keep your place here, but we're going to pop back to Isaiah real quick. Isaiah chapter 14, verse 12. And we see another angle of the same event. Oh, how you have fallen from the heavens, O Hillel, the son of the morning. You have been cut down to the ground. You have laid low the nations. For you said in your heart, Let me go up to the heavens, and let me raise my throne above the stars of El, and let me sit in the mount of appointment on the sides of the north. Let me go above the heights of the clouds, and let me be like the Most High. But you are brought down to Sheol, to hell, to the grave, to the sides of the pit. Those who see you stare at you and ponder over you, saying, Is this the man who made the earth to tremble and shook kingdoms, who made the world as a wilderness and destroyed cities and would not open the house of his prisoners? All the kings of the nations, all of them, were laid in esteem, everyone in his own house. But you have been thrown from your burial site like an abominable branch, like the garment of those who are killed, thrust through with a sword, who go down to the stones of the pit like a trampled corpse. You are not joined with them in the burial place, for you have destroyed your land and killed your people. Let the seed of evildoers never be mentioned. Prepare his children for the slaughter, because of the crookedness of their fathers, lest they raise up and possess the land and fill the face of the world with cities. And I shall rise up against them, declares Jehovah of hosts. And I shall cut off from Babel the name and remnant, and the offspring and descendant, declares Jehovah. And going back to Revelation, for our closing verse, Revelation chapter 20, and beginning in verse 7, we see the end state of all those who take the mark and all those who follow the beast. Now, when the 1,000 years have been completed, Satan shall be loosed out of the prison. And he shall go out and deceive the nations that are the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, of whom the number is as a sea of the sand, to gather them together for war. Then I saw them go forth upon the breadth of the earth and encircle the camp of the saints and the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and consumed them. And the devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet had been cast. And they, Satan and the demons, shall be tormented day and night into the ages of eternity. And I saw the great white throne, and the one who is sitting on it, and from whose face the earth, the heavens, fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. And the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is a book of life. And the dead were judged from out of the things written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead that were in it, and the death and the grave gave up their dead that were in them. And they were judged individually according to their works. And death and the grave were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And if anyone was found not written in the book of life, he was cast into the lake of fire. Just as Christ's miracles and good deeds done by the power and Spirit in the name of God could fill so many numerous volumes that it would fill the whole earth should they be written, so too is the wickedness of Satan, the accuser of the brethren, of you. But that is a book we should never ever need to read, because the wicked, after all, are not written down in eternal volumes like the righteous in the book of life. Their names are blotted out. Their names are forgotten forevermore.